Welcome to Snack Break. We speak to experts, mostly about policy, but also about snacks.
President Trump has insulted the New York Times 164 times on Twitter since August 3rd, 2015. He's called it fake news, truly one of the worst newspapers, said they knowingly write lies, never even called a fact check, the most inaccurate coverage constantly, a newspaper of fiction, and capital S-A-D, sad. Here with me today is Chief Washington Correspondent and National Security Reporter David Sanger of the New York Times. David, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, Arup. Only 164 times? It seems like so many more.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Sure. What are we here for?
Trump has insulted 365 people and places, according to your newspaper, and that includes your colleagues, Maggie Haberman, columnists, reporters in the New York Times. But he's never insulted you personally on Twitter, not once.
Yeah.
Do you feel left out?
I'm working my way up to it, I think. You know, it's sort of strange. With Maggie, I did these two long foreign policy interviews with him during the campaign, and then we've had some conversations, not many since. And so there's the side of Donald Trump that wants to go insult the New York Times and strike back every time he reads something he doesn't like. And if you're Donald Trump and you're reading the New York Times, I don't think you can go through a day without a couple of stories you probably don't like. By the way, Barack Obama didn't like much of what he read in the New York Times. George W. Bush certainly didn't and used to let me know about it when I was White House correspondent. Bill Clinton certainly didn't. Abe Lincoln had some problems with things he read in the New York Times.
Really?
Yes. So this is not unusual. What's unusual is that he tweets about it. The other oddity, though, is that for Donald Trump, this is a hometown newspaper. He cares about what's in the New York Times. And the result is that we probably have more and better access to him and the people around him than we had for the Obama during the
Obama administration. Why is that? Just because you've been interviewing him for so many years?
Well, Maggie, for sure, has interviewed him for many years. I had one encounter with him when he was a real estate developer and I was a young reporter in New York, and that was 30 years ago. I didn't have any encounters with him until the campaign started up. He cares about what's said about him in the New York Times because it's read by his friends in New York and because he knows that it's a tone-setting news organization for the rest of the news. But he also cares about being taken seriously on issues of foreign policy, national security, the kind of stuff I write about.
But why isn't he doing anything to change that?
Well, you know, he has actually gotten out and talked to us a fair bit. More, I would say, than President Obama has.
Now, you've had more access to Trump than you had for Obama.
Yes.
But the more he talks to you guys, the less seriously people seem to take him.
Well, that may have to do with how he perceives and how the rest of the world perceives what the quality of his answers are on things. But when we sat down to do the foreign policy interviews over the course of two interviews, we had probably 3 hours.
And you didn't get that kind of access to any other kind of candidate?
No.
Do you think he has a soft spot for the New York Times, sort of love-hate relationship?
I think it's a really complex, really complex issue. He said all the things that you just said, and then he came to lunch at the Times after he was elected president and said, this place is the crown jewel of American journalism.
Yet he didn't show up to the correspondents' dinner?
That's right. By the way, is not an all bad thing. I mean,
why is that?
We don't show up at the correspondents' dinner anymore either. We haven't gone in about 10 years because it's turned into such a zoo.
What do you mean by that?
At the moment that people started inviting celebrities and then corporate executives started coming to see the celebrities and be seen there, it had less and less to do with journalism. And so I actually think he did us all a favor.
Really?
Yeah.
You think the correspondence center just shouldn't exist?
Somewhere in the past 30 years, it lost its original purpose, whatever that purpose was.
His fairly aggressive tactics toward, I mean, if other presidents didn't like things that they saw in the New York Times, Trump seems especially vocal about them.
That's right.
And do you think that's changed the normative role of media? Do you see your role as a journalist or reporter any differently now in the Trump era than you did before?
There is a temptation to be more confrontational because you're attacked and it's only human to, you know, sort of strike back at that. I think that would be a mistake. I think the reason people read the New York Times is that they're looking for a reasoned, explanatory, nonpartisan, and I know there are a lot of people out there who go and they look and they say, you know,
yeah.
the New York Times during the campaign. I can't tell you how many of my friends, how many colleagues here at Harvard have said to me, you know, the Times was in the tank for Hillary Clinton. And I remind them, so remember all those stories you read about Hillary Clinton's private email server in Chappaqua, the thing that may have ultimately killed a good deal of her president right. of her candidacy? Say, yeah. I said, how did that story happen? Who broke that story? The New York Times.
But certainly with the New York Times, the editorials, for instance, are reflective of a liberal perspective. And do you think facts can be liberal?
Facts are facts. The editorial page is definitely to the right. left of center,
right.
okay? And I would say the Washington Post's editorial page these days is a little bit right of center, and the Wall Street Journal's significantly to the right of that. I still live in a world, I work in the news side, where, frankly, we don't care what our editorials say. We're out there to go report on the most interesting stories we can mm-hmm. and to provide the best analysis we can. Analysis and editorial are two different things. I'm ready to concede that in the internet era, sometimes that has been blurred, and sometimes we've made mistakes and blurred it.
You hungry?
I'm always hungry, Arup. You know me.
Jay, do you think we could get the snack of choice? Your favorite snack here is a chocolate-covered macaroon. Now, that's these guys right here.
That's right.
We have the lemon macaroon and a coconut macaroon.
And then plain old macaroon.
But there's a difference. Those are macarons.
That's right.
And they're basically little sugar hamburgers. They have
that's more
meringue.
Like what you find in France, right?
Right. The people here call them French macaroons. I just know that they're macarons and they're macaroons. French macaroons just makes it even more complicated for me.
It does, yeah.
But those are meringue based, and of course these are like ground almond paste with some have coconut. So if you want to jump in,
Well, I certainly will. I have to tell you, there's one bakery in Cambridge here that's been making this chocolate version for a while. And, you know, I've gotten them over the years for my wife, for my kids. But I always buy a few more than I admit to and then, you know, sneak them on the way.
So this is Darwin's.
That's Darwin's.
Then these are from Darwin's.
They are the real thing.
They're the real thing. Although the macarons thing. Are from Crema, which we love.
Well,
love you, Crema.
I love Crema, and I have my coffee in Crema. But, you know, if I've got to go do the complete sugar fix,
yeah.
if you're going to have the calories, it better be worth the
from
calories.
From Darwin's?
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should try it out.
Oh, then. We're going to have to try it for sure.
So we got a napkin here if you need. Oh my God.
They're really good, aren't they?
Incredible.
So, three layers of this.
Yeah, there's ganache on top, it looks like.
That's right. There's the base macaroon,
mm-hmm.
then there's the ganache inside, and right. then they cover it in a sort of hard chocolate. Yeah.
I used to work at a Swiss pastry shop in Kansas City.
That's when you had a real job.
Real job, that's right. I was for a year I was a janitor, and then I was a cashier, so we used to sell. Slightly different. You'll see with some of the coconut, with the macaroons, is they'll be star-shaped, kind of vertical, elevated stars, and those will be the coconut macaroons, which they'll cover in chocolate, which are also delicious. This is more of a, almost like a San Moritz, which is an almond macaroon with ganache.
This is a real sugar fix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What got
this
you
may
so
get, in- This may get me all the way through my class today.
This is a favorite of the New York Times, or... This is a challenge.
You know, this is a favorite when I'm in Cambridge.
As a national security correspondent, you traveled all over the place. You traveled with the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, the President. With macaroons, do you find still that you come back and Cambridge is the best place in the world? Or when you go to France or Italy or wherever, how do you compare these
things? I love going a lot of different places in the world. Traveling with the President is the closest thing to going somewhere and never really being there.
Really?
Because you're on Air Force One, you're off Air Force One, you're into a motorcade. The next thing you're looking at is the inside of a hotel ballroom that has been set aside for the press.
So you don't get an accurate read on what's going on,
yeah.
or you don't get
no.
to eat local.
No.
Do you eat local food even?
You have to walk out of the bubble in order to do
really.
Otherwise food will be
yeah.
brought to you. And sometimes that works. I remember going to Mongolia with President Bush. And there were lovely ladies elderly ladies in Mongolia who knew we were coming, and they were cooking yak dishes for weeks before we came.
That's a long time.
And we ate every kind of yak in the course of a day or day and a half there. And I had never eaten yak
what
before.
What does it taste like? Chewy. I sort of think it'd be chewy. Is
let's
chewy?
Say that it's not like a Darwin's macaron.
No? Okay. Let's move to your to being a national security correspondent. You are, one thing your job means is that people leak secrets to you, and then you report them in the news, secret information or confidential information. What's the best way of getting somebody to tell you their secrets? Do you, does it help to feed them?
Well, actually, sometimes it does help to feed them. I've never tried the macaroon trick. You know?
I suggest it.
I mean, Bob Woodward met people in parking lots.
Yeah.
I've never had 35 years in this business. Yeah. Nobody's ever leaked anything to me in a parking lot. People have a simplistic view of what leaking is all about. Rarely does somebody come to you and say, I have this secret, I need to go tell you. Sometimes you'll hear that because there's a decision made for an official leak. You know, I've had, during the Bush administration, I had people come to me officially sanctioned by the Secretary of State or the President or someone to say, we think the North Koreans are getting ready to test a nuclear weapon. Mm-hmm. This is before they had ever tested a nuclear weapon.
Right.
That would be pretty, today you'd say, oh, another one?
Yeah.
Right, but back
then
it was actually
huge.
News.
Yeah.
Right. So that's one category.
Yeah.
There's the category of the self-aggrandizing leak. You know, this is happening or this is not happening only because I stepped in and made it happen.
So it's about the individual.
Right.
Who's leaking.
Right.
Okay.
They'll tell you they're just part of a team, but
right.
really it's all about them.
Yeah.
Okay. Those don't tend to be the most interesting and most important. The most important leaks come out of studying an issue with such care that you go off and you say to yourself, I have a hypothesis that X is happening, and then you go test it. So let me give you an example.
Yeah.
Earlier this year, my colleague Bill Broad and I wrote a story, pretty controversial story, about a U.S. cyber program against North Korea's missiles.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We came to the story because we looked at the failure rate of their missile launches, and it was wildly high compared to what the design of that missile, which was an old Soviet design, was back in the Soviet era.
Right.
And usually what happens is people start missile programs like the United States did in the 40s and 50s. They blow a lot of stuff up. They figure it out. They get better. The North Koreans were pretty good and suddenly got worse. Then you start researching and you try and figure it out. And we found some evidence in public testimony of a program called Left of Launch, discussion of how you would stop a launch before it happened. And only then were we able to sort of intuit our way through and then find people to confirm for us what we suspected.
And that's the leak. So you like kind of take a little bit of information and say, hey, senior official, this is what I think going on.
And they... So what I love about this is, you know, prosecutors every once in a while, when they're going to look for leakers, they assume that, you know, one person came and told you the secrets of the universe.
Right.
Instead, it's more the way prosecutors build cases. They're looking at individual pieces of evidence, they're putting it together, and then they've got to go find the people who would confirm or deny that.
Do you ever feel guilty about leaking?
I don't leak. Do I ever feel guilty about
reporting leaks?
About reporting leaks.
Yeah.
We are certainly try to be pretty careful when it comes to the national security world. That we're not putting lives in danger, that we're not putting individual operations
in danger. So there's a conversation with the government.
And frequently we will engage in a conversation with the government if they will engage with us on it. That's a difficult thing for people in the government to do because you can't have that conversation without talking about classified material, okay? Frequently they do it anyway, okay? Or they get permission to do it from somebody who has original classification authority. So we try to be careful, but we also know we live in a world of wild overclassification.
Yeah.
And if we simply published what the government said was okay to publish, we'd be living in China.
Last question. Is there a magic number for leaks? Like if you were to tell a certain number of people, can you basically guarantee that it's going to get leaked out? If the president convenes a number of people, is there kind of a number there? Like a magic number where you say, okay, I can pretty much bet that we're going to find out what happened in that meeting.
Yeah, more than three people in the room.
More than three?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you apply that to all secrets or just the president?
Well, you know, most White House-related secrets. Yeah. There was a great moment in early in the Obama administration when they were reviewing the Afghanistan and Pakistan policy. And they wanted to be very public about the fact that they were reviewing the policy because they wanted to say, we're thinking about this from the ground up. Yeah. We're releasing photographs of National Security Council meetings. We're looking at the photographs and saying, wow, why is so-and-so there? Why, you know, then you're beginning to think, gee, if this person is there, it's got to be because the conversation has turned in this direction, okay? Mm-hmm. So then you go out and you find the people, and
you found out what was
we were
on.
Writing stories each time this group would meet, or the Washington Post was, or others. It wasn't just us. And finally, about the fourth or fifth meeting, the president stopped and looked around the room and said, if anybody here can't have this conversation without going in to talk to the New York Times or the Washington Post, you know, please step out now. And sure enough, there was a story later that said, President erupts about leaks in national security meeting. So, that answer your question?
Well, this is, well, absolutely. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you,
Arup. It's been a pleasure.
Great.
All right, great.